Greetings, dear listeners, and welcome to another episode of The Working Experience, a very warm open arm audio embrace and a squeeze. This episode is brought to you by my company, One Circle Media. One Circle Media is a hybrid digital agency and media content creator. We create and design apps, websites, videos, social media content, and physical products. We are artists, directors, designers, producers, coders, editors, thinkers, makers, and creators who embrace story and creativity from design, web and app development, animation, docs, features, TV shows, digital and social media content to physical products. For our clients, we create content that builds networks and audiences across multiple platforms. Check out our work at onecircledigital.com and onecirclebrand.com. If you work for a network, studio, brand, startup, or corporation and are looking for a partner to create media that will build, engage, and entertain, reach out to me at john@onecirclemedia.com. I'd love to hear from you. Thanks, everyone, and I hope you enjoyed this episode of The Working Experience.
The Working Experience.
Route 93 North is almost at a standstill. It's a rough one out there this morning. Snow and sleet.
There is no service on
the... Stand clear of the closing doors, please.
Yeah, folks. We're going to be a few minutes. We have train traffic ahead of us. We should be moving shortly.
John, we need that report ASAP.
Where are we on that presentation?
Dan, HR wants to see you.
Did you return that email yet?
We have a team meeting at 10.
To stay late, Bob.
Teamwork makes the dream work.
They're moving in a different direction.
And after the meeting, we'll have a breakout session.
Who ate my biscuits?
Where are my hot pockets?
This microwave is disgusting.
Oh, God, what's that
He was dipping his
Sexual
toenails at
harassment.
His desk. I can't take it anymore.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to this episode of the Working Experience Podcast. It's Maddie K. The office monsters are trying to claw their way back to 2019. Pre-pandemic. I find myself all the time now referencing, saying like, well, this must have been 3 years ago because it was before the pandemic. It's now one or the other. It used to be, for me, 9/11. I would remember things before 9/11. And then things after 9/11, because I lived in New York City at the time. On that day, I was teaching in the Bronx. I had to walk all the way home to Brooklyn. I lived maybe a mile from the World Trade Center where that happened. Every day after, for about, probably 3-4 months, when I would get on the train to go over the bridge into Manhattan and then onto the Bronx, you could see that smoking crater. And the whole train, every single time, would go silent and everybody would turn and look at it. That was my kind of before and after moment for a lot of people, you know, obviously for millions of people. And now the pandemic, I'm sure for just billions of people, there was before the pandemic, after the pandemic. So some corporate leaders are grasping at whatever they can get, at whatever they can to get back to the way things were. But they might find themselves fighting a culture shift beyond their control. I was just doing a podcast about employees not being willing, not only not wanting to anymore, but being unwilling, saying, no, I'm not doing it, and not going back to the office, despite the tote bags and the ping pong tables and the cold brew and... the t-shirts and the beanbag tosses and craft beer day on Friday. They're just like, hey, man, it is not worth the commute. But some, I think a lot of CEOs, they really want to, they don't like to feel out of control. They don't want their employees. I mean, I couldn't imagine before the pandemic an employee saying to a prospective employer, I'm not coming into the office. I mean, that would be, I can't conceive of it. You know, if you lived in Texas and you got a job in New York, you moved to New York. That's what you did. If you got a job in California, wherever it is. Certain places of the country were kind of tough to move to because there really weren't jobs readily available. But now, you know, if you got a decent internet hookup, it doesn't matter. Like, you can work for Meta or Google or whoever else, and I guess according to most of these employees, they don't have to come into an office. They can get all their work done at home. That's probably very unsettling for a lot of CEOs. They don't like the loss of control. And I can get it. I mean, I'm rarely sympathetic to CEOs, but I can kind of get it. So this article is by Vivian Jiang. I hope I'm pronouncing her name correctly. And it says, as long as work has existed, employers have tried to size up their employees' commitment to their jobs. Are you on the fast track, the mommy track, the leadership track? Now, if some corporate leaders have their way, there will be a new test for workplace devotion, and anyone who opts for remote work gets a failing grade. But can CEOs really claw their way back to 2019? I guess it was always, you know, if somebody was first in, last out. You know, they're there at 7 a.m., they're in the office till 8 o'clock at night, always working, working, grinding, grinding. John and I did so many podcasts before the pandemic, kind of poking fun at grind culture. You know, there's that woman from Yahoo, she put out the memo about working 100 hours a week and all, you know, and workism. Erin Griffin, I don't know if she coined that phrase, but she talked about it. People just working relentlessly and for no kind of clear purpose. But there is something to be said for, you know, like FaceTime. Like if the boss sees you in the office, if you know, hey, that's Jim or that's Sarah. Man, I always see them here. They're always working. At least they appear to be working. I guess that puts you on the fast track. If you're never around, and it's kind of not fair. I mean, if you're never around in the office, but you're really nailing it, like you're really getting your projects done, you're bringing in new clients, obviously that should say something, but people are people, you know? You meet somebody face to face, it's just different than them being a little square in a Zoom meeting. So Elon Musk issued an ultimatum to his employees. They either return to the office 40 hours a week or lose their jobs. And I think that's just in, you know, in the office. So you're obviously expected to work a lot more than that. But they would at least have to show their faces for 40 hours a week. He is known for camping out for weeks at Tesla factories. He thinks remote work is an affront to productivity and personal commitment. Last month, he praised Chinese workers for burning the 3 a.m. oil. God, I wouldn't last. I literally would not last half a day working for him. I would get fired within 2 seconds. Jamie Dimon said last month that working from home isn't for people who want to hustle, in quotes, to hustle. The bank has been criticized for tracking employees' ID badge swipes to monitor how often they were coming into the office, along with similar policing by rivals like Goldman Sachs. Mr. Dimon believes JP Morgan's work setup will look just like it did before September or October, but he also admitted in a letter to shareholders that remote work will become more permanent in American business. According to him, although the pandemic changed the way we work in many ways, for the most part, it only accelerated ongoing trends. As my colleague reported, he didn't sound particularly happy about it, ticking off the serious weaknesses of virtual work, including slowed decision-making and a lack of spontaneous learning and creativity. Well, I could kind of, I could agree with him on the spontaneous learning and creativity. There is something to be said for being in a group like that. The resistance to remote work has many facets, including the bottom line. Many organizations have made pricey investments in office real estate, which has led to the creation of vast economic systems that are ultimately reliant on having workers at their desks. I'm trying to fill up office buildings, and I'm telling JP Morgan Sachs, I'm telling all of them, listen, I need your people back into office so we can build the ecosystem, Mayor Eric Adams of New York City said this week. The city, which is heavily reliant on tax revenue from massive midtown offices, recently announced a strict policy of in-person work for city employees. How does that look that city employees are home while I'm telling everyone else it's time to get back to work? Mr. Adams added. City employees should be leading the charge of saying New York can be back. I don't really, you know, I mean, how does that sound to somebody who lives out on Long Island, because they're talking about Manhattan here. They live in New Jersey, and their commute's like an hour and a half each way, that they have to come in because of a tax base, because of tax revenue. I mean, just because they built this ecosystem, it doesn't mean that these people exist to support that ecosystem. I'll have to get into this in another one because it's kind of a hard philosophical thing for me to articulate. But just because somebody owns an office building or leases an office building doesn't necessarily mean that workers have to go there. Like, that to me does not seem to be a compelling reason for people to go back in the office, simply because we have all this office space and New York City needs the tax revenue. You know, again, I feel badly for businesses that relied on that. Restaurants, diners, bars, things like that. But, you know, Janet Smith, who's living, again, like, you know, maybe in Connecticut or, I mean, Manhattan is impossibly expensive to live in. And especially if you have a family. So for her, if it saves her 3 hours of a commute, and I know people who do that. I mean, they write about these things. They take the Long Island Railroad in, and it can be a nightmare. That is not a compelling reason. You know, just because you've overextended yourselves on office space, well, so what? I do get his point about city employees sitting at home. Again, a lot of different perspectives on it. Beyond the bottom line, the back-to-office debate is about what kind of culture will prevail as the business world emerges from the pandemic. And for all of the power wielded by Mr. Musk, Mr. Diamond, and Mr. Adams, they may be fighting a shift that is larger than any single company or city. Yeah, it is. I mean, these days, the labor force, the way it is very easy for an employee to say, hey, see you later. If the pandemic's 2+ years of remote work experimentation have taught us anything, it's that many people can be productive outside the office, and quite a few are happier doing so. That's especially true for people with young children or long commutes, minority workers who have a tougher time fitting in with the standard office culture, or those with other personal circumstances that make working in offices less attractive. We are still struggling to let go of the ideal worker stereotype, even though that person, for a lot of people in occupations and demographic groups in the U.S., never really existed, said Colleen Ammerman, the director of the Gender Initiative at Harvard Business School. I think with remote work and hybrid, we have the potential to truly move away from that and really rethink what it means to be on a leadership track, what it means to be a high performer, and to get away from all that being associated with being at the office at all hours. You know, I'd have to assume that a lot of those people, well, I don't want to say a lot, but some of those people who were, you know, supposedly working 12 hours a day, I mean, what were they actually doing for 12 hours? Were they actually working? You could also make the argument that, number one, why can't you get your work done in less time than that? And number two, what is it that is really so important? Like, are you developing a new food app or something? Or are you actually doing something that could really be impactful on the world? I think that was the argument that Aaron Griffin made. Like, what are you actually doing at the office for 100 hours a week? Like, again, is it really that important? Like, Facebook and stuff like that? Like, is it really that earth-shattering? Even as the pandemic changed course, there are signs that the work-from-home trend is actually accelerating. One recent survey published in the National Bureau of Economic Research found that employers are now saying they will allow employees to work from home an average of 2.3 days per week, up from 1.5 days in the summer of 2020. So, even though we seem to be on the other side of the pandemic, this trend of staying home has accelerated. And again, this whole idea of what employers are allowing, I think some employees are like, you're not going to allow or not allow me to do anything. I'm going to tell you what I'm willing to do. It's not just the office, it's almost the commute. I mean, everybody's complained about their commute since there have been commutes. And commuting is one of the biggest challenges because most of the time, the place where you work is in an area you cannot afford. So, you know, you're talking, I mean, Atlanta, I remember reading something about the commutes people were doing in the Atlanta area, and it was just, I mean, it would make you want to weep. The Wall Street Journal reported this year that almost all of the major cities with the biggest drops in office occupancy during the pandemic had an average one-way commute of more than 30 minutes, and most cities with the smallest drops had shorter commutes. And Americans are increasingly booking stays for longer than 30 days on Airbnb, Vrbo, and Bookings.com, according to Verid Raviv Schwartz, the president and chief operating officer of Guesty, a software management tool for short-term rentals. At first, industry experts thought the extended stays might be a pandemic blip, but it's gone on for long enough that it may signal workers with jobs that can be done remotely are doubling down and working outside of the normal commute to work patterns. At its heart, the battle over remote work is a test of corporate America's definition of an ideal worker. For decades or even longer, that has been a person who prioritizes their job above all else and has no outside commitments, which is pretty depressing. It says it's not shocking that people who are lower on the org chart tend to be less enthusiastic about returning to the office than the senior leaders and executives who thrived in the in-person before times in capitals before the pandemic. For many CEOs and managers, that's how they worked. That's how they succeeded, and that's the only way they know, Ms. Schultz said. All of this was completely false. It was totally a fake story we've been telling ourselves. So I guess it's not necessarily the person who's, you know, as I said, first in, last out, or who's in there at 11 o'clock at night. That whole idea of prioritizing your job over everything else, I think that kind of started in the late 70s, early 80s, and reached its pinnacle, I would say, maybe around 2012, 2013. And the pandemic, maybe even up right up until the pandemic. And then, although I do remember before that, people were really starting to question that. Like, I mean, it's a job, you know? And again, most of these jobs, if you're coming up with a cure for cancer, you know, if you're being able to help a blind person to see, if you're developing technology where someone who was a quadriplegic is now able to move freely, I mean, yeah, that's amazing. If you're working for, I don't know, TikTok, I mean, come on. You know, this whole like, what, I mean, prioritizing that type of job or a job where it's just about making tons of money, you know, working on Wall Street and whatnot. I mean, it's hard to see that in print that someone would actually prioritize their job over everything else, like their family, their marriage, their kids, missing out on kids, you know, softball games and things like that. That's pretty depressing, but I think I don't think, I mean, it's pretty well known. Like, if you wanted to get ahead on Wall Street, that's what you had to do. You couldn't take an afternoon off to go watch your kid play baseball. I asked somebody that once who had worked at Morgan Stanley. He laughed. Was like, "What are you kidding me?" Like, I mean, he didn't work there anymore. He quit because of that. You know, if you said my kid's going in for surgery on Thursday afternoon, I can't be here in the office, and you worked for Goldman Sachs, you get fired. And that's awful. That's really awful. So, the pandemic has obviously been terribly challenging, but sometimes I guess it needs, society needs something like this where it won't change on its own. It metastasizes into this one way of thinking, and it needs something to be like, no, that's not the way to do it. Like, if you look at pictures from the 1930s, 40s, 50s, you never saw a man outside without a hat on. And they always wore suits, didn't matter how hot it was. And now that doesn't happen anymore. You kind of wonder when did everybody decide, hey, we're not going to wear hats anymore? Obviously, the pandemic is much more specific than that, but I guess sometimes you do need that big kick to get people to change the way they think. All right, everybody. Thanks a lot for listening, and we'll be back at you real soon with more episodes. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to this episode of The Working Experience. We'd like to thank our sponsors, One Circle Media. If you work for a studio, network, startup, or corporation and are looking for a partner to create media that will build, engage, and entertain your audience, reach out to me at john@onecirclemedia.com. I would love to hear from you. And that's it. The end. The sweet end. Until our next audio encounter.